You are listening to Screenfish Radio. I'm your host, Steve Norton. Featuring iconic songs from Andrew Lloyd Webber and starring such talents as Jennifer Hudson, Idris Elba, Taylor Swift, and more, the first big screen portrayal of the Broadway smash musical Cats seemed like a surefire hit over the Christmas season. However, despite its award-winning pedigree, terrible reviews and troubled special effects have caused the film to suffer at the box office. But does the film deserve to be in the center of Oscar buzz, or does it really just cough up a hairball? This week, we're joined by returnee Alan Chabot and newcomer Naomi Bain to talk about Welcoming Outsiders, T.S. Eliot, and what went wrong. Horribly, horribly wrong. Welcome to the Catversation. Welcome to Screenfish.
They imagine cats as a pagan tribe, which also brings other layers into it that I'm just like, well, okay.
See, all the things you're saying, this movie was so neutered of any real subtext as I was watching it. I was sitting there, I'm like, I don't even, like what the frig are Jellicles? Now, the only reason that word even makes sense to me now is when you said it's like they're dead, and I pictured them raising up. I think maybe it's angelical. It's a play on that. They all want to be, but like, oh. Welcome to Screenfish Radio. We are unbelievably thrilled this week to talk about Cats. Yes. The latest film musical to grace the cinema screen. And this week we are thrilled to have back a veteran and a newbie, Alan Chabot. Welcome back.
Thank you.
And Naomi Bain. Welcome, Naomi. So glad to have you.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
This is going to be fun.
It is going to be fun.
We see the movies so you don't have to. No kidding.
Exactly that.
Cats is based on the Andrew Lloyd Webber musical and tells the story of a tribe of cats who must decide yearly which one will ascend to the Heaviside Lair and come back to a new life. The film is directed by Tom Hooper, and as a reminder, this podcast is rated S for spoilers, or maybe H for hairballs, as we talk about the film. I should say before we get started, Naomi, you've seen the movie.
Yes.
I've seen the movie. Alan has seen the play on DVD, but you haven't seen the actual new film.
Right.
Which is fair. That's a fair comment. But you are familiar with the story.
Yes.
Okay, so to both of you, what did you think of Cats?
It was... The way I can best describe it is...
It was a movie.
It was a movie. It really brings me back to, you know, knowing that Alice in Wonderland was written on drugs. I'm just wondering how much of this was created soberly, because I don't believe any sober person can sit down and create what I saw in that movie. Now, I'm not going to say that there was all low lights. There were a few highlights that I really enjoyed. A few. Very few.
Yeah.
Very few. I would say the choreography in the movie was brilliant. Yep. If you could just... If this was a ballet, y'all could have left it at that. This could have been a ballet. This could have just been pure dancing, and it would have been a perfect show. Everything else... I also want to say shout out to the set designer, because it takes a lot of effort to create a set like that. It was whimsical. There was lots of bright colors.
Was it actually built, or was it CG?
No, the actual, when you see the making of the movie, the set designers created an entire world that was supposed to be cat-sized. So for humans, they would have to double everything to make it look extremely, extremely large. So a lot of the set pieces were actually hand-built and crafted for that purpose.
Okay.
now you mentioned about that. How did you feel about the music? Because, you know, you mentioned about the dancing.
Yes.
And I thought I heard you groan when I asked you about the music there. So you weren't happy with the songs.
Shout out to Jennifer Hudson. Memories was a beautiful, beautiful song. Beautiful. Beautiful. Justice for Jennifer. We'll get into that in a second, though.
Justice for anyone who was in this movie. Sorry. Go ahead.
But I found that the music, there were times when it sounded very mumbly to me.
Hmm.
And as someone who, I eat, breathe, live music, I felt that this was the worst that I've ever heard from Andrew Lloyd Webber. I love Andrew Lloyd Webber so much. I think he was brilliant. This was subpar. If you listen to, like, the score of this and then you compare it to something like Phantom of the Opera.
Sure.
Compare it to some of the other things that he's produced. I don't even think it can be compared.
There's a reason to me that Memory is ironically the most memorable of the songs. I liked the music.
Mm-hmm.
I liked the music off and on.
Yes.
I agree with you 100%. I'm glad you said that about it being mumbly.
Yes.
Because a lot of the struggle I had to go was going on, other than it was clearly some form of acid trip. that was happening in front of me. I would take a lot of my cues of story from, you know, in a musical, you take it from the songs, and I couldn't understand what they were saying half the time.
Half the time, it was very, and I don't know if that was a choice done by the directing team or the musical director, but it was not clear. The one song that was clear was Memories.
Yeah, because they had to get Memory right. That was the one thing they had to get Memory right.
They had to get that song right.
So I give you that. I've seen a lot of movies.
Yeah.
I've seen not as many as others, and more than some.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what I just saw. I sat there watching this. I can't remember the last time I came out of a theater utterly confused from start to finish.
Yeah.
Just from a structure standpoint. And again, I know it's the play. I went in cold. I had no Cats experience. You've seen the play. I haven't seen the play.
Yes.
I didn't do the research because I said I heard this is just a wild ride. I'm going to take the wild ride. The first hour of the play is introducing characters.
Mm-hmm.
Or the first hour of the musical. Like, so they'll do in musical numbers. So they introduce Veronica?
Veronica.
Veronica. And they do an intro there. And you think they're starting to tell the story. And then they introduce this character, where has Jason Derulo been? Like, has he been in, like, music jail? Like, I don't know where he is. I don't know
where he's been.
He just showed up.
It was a very interesting choice where I was just like, but Jason Derulo and Alfredis can sing.
He can.
And can dance.
Absolutely.
He's amazing at those two things. Okay, so if we're really going to start going into the plot, and we have to understand the first hour is nothing but introductions, because of the way that this play was written and it was structured, right?
Sure.
So when we're looking at this, we have to understand this was a collection of poetry written by T.S. Eliot that adapted into a play for Broadway, then adapted into a movie.
Were the plays sequential? Were the poems sequential? Like, you're saying it was a collection of poems that was written in the Broadway play. But was it a story, or was it a question of stories?
It was literally, from the plays, it just talks about different cats. That's all the play is. But this also goes back to T.S. Eliot when we actually look at him. T.S. Eliot was kind of like a crazy cat dude. How we have crazy cat ladies.
Eliot was a crazy cat dude. Hashtag crazy cat dude. That is, I'll throw that in.
So when we're looking at that, because that's what really got him to this point, was that this whole book was just based off his love of cats.
Okay.
And that's why we have, like, he wanted to see how he could give cats human qualities and sort of describe the humanness of them in these poems, which is why we have these, like, long musical numbers that are like, this is an introduction to this cat or this cat or this cat.
Okay, that makes more sense.
So that's where, when we're looking at this story, it sort of starts off with that. And then it sort of in order to fuse these poems together, they create this, excuse my language, but it is the most plot I've ever heard. Okay? Because when we're really thinking about this plot, what this story is about is that on this one night...
Is it once a year?
Once a year. All the Jellicle cats get together.
Yeah.
And old Deuteronomy, the leader of the Jellicle cats, chooses one cat who gets to die. And that's why it's called Heavenside Lair. Because you are literally going off to heaven to be reincarnated.
Yep.
Well, that, yeah. Yes, that's a thing. That is a thing. When was the play done? What year was it? Do we know?
I think the play started off in 94.
81. It says here. I found it. Thank you, Google. Premiere was in London in 81. So, I mean...
It won the Tony Award in 1983, and I believe the readaptation that was done in 1998 with a score of 7.6 on IMDb versus the 2.6 for the current one that we're discussing.
Oh, it got that high, did it? Oh, okay. Sorry.
So there's quite the difference in score as far as the film, but I also feel that the production of it based in the 90s and how much effort went into that production and a 70-piece orchestra to go towards the score and the sound, I feel like that probably added more of an excitement to that version because it was more of a theater-style film versus it being... Like my version of this movie would be, you know, cut down on the CGI.
Ironically, it might have worked with more. And I'm thinking of this now.
Yeah.
What if they'd actually used CGI cats? What if they Lion Kinged it?
Yeah.
Like would it have been more believable?
No. No? No, there's nothing.
I don't think it would be any better.
There's nothing believable of this story, though. This is a whole entire thing. It's that none of this movie was believable. None of it. Like,
it wasn't even that way. Like, it was supposed to be whimsical. You said whimsical.
Yes.
I didn't even think it was a
I thought the set was whimsical. And I say it's whimsical because of the colors that were used.
Sure.
And the sizes. I would love to play on the set. I would love to just, like, have a playground day and play on the set.
There's something here. I don't know if you two know this or not. There are two things I know about this movie. One of them is this is maybe the first movie in history that after its release, the studio changed it. I mean, on the Saturday, it came out on the Friday, I think. It might have come out on the Wednesday. Came out on the Friday. By Saturday, the studio had sent an email to the theaters saying, we're going to send you another copy, updated copy, show this. Because people were so freaked out by the special effects, they said, we're going to work on it more. The other thing I know, I have a friend of mine who's a reviewer, and he went to a special screening, an early screening of this, and the director was there, Tom Hooper was there, he said, oh, I finished it this morning. So, and this was like 2 weeks before its release. So, and it still wasn't finished when it was out. And so...
That's bad. That's really bad.
I'm thinking if there is a huge issue over Sonic's face for the new upcoming Sonic film, I feel if that had backlash and you're getting that same kind of feeling even just going into the trailer.
But there was so much backlash from the trailer.
That's why I'm saying that should be enough to say maybe this is a direct-to-video type of movie that we don't talk about ever again.
Or, now here's the thing about Sonic. The Sonic the Hedgehog movie. You know the situation? The Sonic? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, he looked ridiculous. And now he actually looks more like, you know, the Sonic that you expect.
Exactly.
Because they said, holy crap, we're going to lose money on this. Everybody hates how he looks. No one's going to see it. Let's fix it. We got time. But they kept their release date. And, I mean, when did the first trailer come out? In the summertime, I think it was. And people reacted strongly then.
Yeah.
I said nope.
I saw the trailer. I was like, what?
I love cats, but not necessarily the play specifically, but I love cats in general. And I'm sorry. I just, nope.
No.
You don't want a giant CGI James Corden rummaging through your garbage.
Or Rebel Wilson sitting on my couch.
Okay, can we talk about Rebel Wilson for a second? Because, I can't unsee that scene. There is no way in hell I can unsee that scene. Okay?
There were a lot of things that took place.
Oh, my God.
Go back to mermaid dancing.
Literally, I was just like, Rebel Wilson, I love Rebel Wilson, but this, I... A okay, so
this podcast
first,
is just gonna be me laughing.
The first link here, and this is where I'm coming from, right, is Rebel Wilson as the cat alone. Costume designing. Listen. There was so many little things, but Rebel Wilson in that cat suit with the boobs and, like, just laying around, and then all of a sudden she's wearing, like, a lingerie dress, this pink lingerie. So you already have the awkwardness with the cat suit, and then you put on the pink dress to go on top of that, and then you have the roaches who had human faces, and then the mice that had human faces, and then she's eating the roaches with the human faces, and it's just disturbing. There is no other way to describe it except to stir that entire scene.
You know, but that, see, and I know this sounds idiotic, and I meant it half as a joke. There's nothing believable with the story, and I don't think it's meant to be believable, but it doesn't even, it's, you can't even suspend your disbelief because of how creepy they look. You said if it was a stage play, it would work. You know why? Because you know they're people pretending to be cats.
Well, that's what I think, why it did so well back then, and I guess back then, yeah, in the 90s, was it was just, everyone knew the concept of it was, it's theater. So when you get theater, you know what to expect. It's going to be elaborate with its costumes. It's going to be elaborate with its stage, you know, sure, design. It's going to, you know, the music is going to be specifically key. You know, the sounds, everything. You know, I feel like that definitely was taken into account. I'm not saying it wasn't in this specific one, but I feel like when you watch the one from the 90s, you're more drawn to it because it was just how well they did with the costuming. Whereas this one, you know, they're not wearing costumes. They're wearing little lights on their bodies that indicate that.
But that's my point. So, for example, and I mean, we never podcasted on The Lion King. We were going to, and we never get it scheduling down. But, and say what you will about the film, I mean, you suspend your disbelief because you're watching the lions on there. And they're animated, and they're saying they got human voices. But you're not staring at someone in a cat suit. So you're able to separate yourself. So my question is, in a film like this, would that work? Or is it still like, I guess if you have a tabby cat sitting there belting out memory with Jennifer Hudson's voice, it might not be the same thing either.
I don't think doing CGI for this movie makes sense.
Okay. No.
I think that's one of the things that they messed up the most on.
Yep.
Because I feel like what the success was of the stage play is that the costumes were fun. They came alive. And it was all done with costuming. They mixed too much of technology into this movie.
That's fair.
You know what I mean? If you're going to do a classic musical like this, because Cats was one of the longest running shows on Broadway.
Until 2006.
One of the most famous, yeah. And
it was Phantom of the Opera after that, right?
No, it was Wicked. Les Mis took over after 2006, but I was also just reading that it has aired in, been produced and staged in 26 countries.
Cats?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it did say that they held the record for in London for the longest running musical until October 8th, 2006, when it was surpassed by Les Mis. So, you know, it definitely had a following, but I feel that you're right. When it comes to costume,
yeah,
I feel that if that had actually been actual costumes, maybe the outlook on it would be a lot more different versus CGI bodies that no one ever in life needs to see.
Yeah. And I think, like, this is an excellent, because if we're talking about The Lion King, we can also talk about what The Lion King did right with the stage performance versus, you know, this movie that we had. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yes.
The Lion King took puppetry and took really sleek looks to transform and give you those illusions on stage.
Right.
Which worked excellent for them.
Yeah.
And they still were able to, it was that same kind of adaptation. You know what I mean? I feel like they did not adapt this movie properly.
No. I think they said, here's a big cast. Let's see how much money it can make.
Yeah. Yeah.
What bothers me most is that we had Wicked pushed back because of this. Wicked was scheduled for the same release date, and they're like, no, we're going to do Cats instead. So Wicked's now been pushed back 2 or 3 years.
Yes.
And I'm like, Wicked, you can do.
Yeah.
Wicked's going to be done easily. Wicked has been popular over the last few years. Yeah. I feel like it would probably, as long as they don't screw that up, it will be very, you know, done well.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess they could screw it up. But I mean, we've seen tons of stage performances translate well on screen.
Yes.
Yeah.
Tons of them. And this one is a huge, Rent was wonderful. Even Les Mis was Les Mis was great.
Phantom of the Opera was good.
Phantom of the Opera.
Like,
and those are classic, classic stories. Yeah.
We've seen so many adaptations of West Side Story. Like, it is possible to do. But I also feel like, I don't know much about the costume person that did this movie, but I wonder what would have been different if you chose someone in theater to create the costumes for this. Because I felt like the cat suits were uncomfortable. Mm. You know what I mean? Like,
they made you uncomfortable or uncomfortable for that?
They made me uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I was just like, and then there was like little details inside of those costumes that I was also like, let's, like, for me, again, justice for Jennifer Hudson, but why was Jennifer Hudson wearing acrylic nails and a cat suit?
They were cat nails.
But no one else had acrylic nails on.
She looked very creepy. She reminded me of Missy Elliott from one of her music videos from the 90s.
Which one? But
the one that she did with Melanie B. I feel like that could probably, like, yes, you know, okay. You see
but
what I'm saying now?
Her character's supposed to appear that way. To be fair, her character, right. Whatever her character's name is, which, did they ever give one? Oh, they did. But her character's supposed to make you uncomfortable
but
when you see
her. But
her
makeup didn't give her
it wasn't
edge.
The makeup that made me uncomfortable. It was just, like, the detail, because she had acrylic nails. Then I looked at Taylor Swift's nails. Taylor Swift had bright red nails that weren't acrylic nails, and that there was other characters who had, like, things that were able to, like, pop up out of their hands to give them claw, like, the key. And then some cats were completely naked, and then there were some cats that had clothes, and I was just like,
what are you doing?
If there was consistency,
yeah,
and this is a thing, I feel like if they had decided to give all the cats clothes,
that might have helped, actually.
It would have been cohesive.
It would have been cohesive, mm-hmm. And it would have made them less... You could still get the cat vibe without feeling so creeped out.
You're right.
Like, Jane Dench's character, I love that costume.
Judi Dench?
Judi Dench, yes. Yeah. It was just a fur coat. It was a fab fur coat.
Yeah.
But it was just a fur coat.
Fur is murder.
And I was just like...
Listen, we're not going to have that debate over this film.
Sorry. I'm sorry. I was more referencing Sex and the City, but, you know, hey. No.
So there's that aspect, too, where it was just like... If you had decided to do human cats, give them clothes, give them something. Because I felt less creeped out by the cats that had costumes... than I did with the cats that didn't have costumes.
That's interesting, though. I bet you that goes to the human connection. I didn't even draw that connection, but yeah, most of them were nudists by that standard. Like, what is it? Can't even pronounce half their names. Mr. Mephistopheles. The magician guy. What's his name?
Mr. Mephistopheles.
Mr. Mephistopheles is wearing a top hat and a jacket, and Victoria's there, standing there with no clothes on.
Yeah.
I never even... But maybe because these are very clearly humans, maybe that helps.
Yeah.
Maybe that helps. Even if the others were just wearing... Like, because you want to be able... Your main characters to stand out. But even if they were just wearing a white coat or something, color of their skin, something like that, maybe...
Yes. And, like...
I don't know.
And they could have done, like... Like I said, they could have done the fur. They could have done the fake fur stuff. Like... There was just so many things that they could have done differently once it came to the production of costuming, because I think this is where the biggest issue lays.
Can I totally, like, sidestep that? Because you mentioned Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
Who I actually liked her number, be honest, as bizarre as it was. But can we give some justice to Taylor Swift? Because where did she go?
Are you ready for it?
No, I'm saying, think of what happens. I'm obviously kidding. But I mean, Magnificat or whatever his name is. Idris Elba. He says, I'm going to go get him. And he grabs Taylor Swift and disappears. McCavity grabs Taylor Swift and disappears into the night.
Yes.
And then when he reappears, she's nowhere. Did he drop her in the ocean? Did he murder her? She's never in the film again.
They
had bad blood.
That's why I'm joking. They had bad blood. Very nice. I saw that and I went, there's going to be a big number. Nope. He's standing on the roof. Because he said, we'll get you.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, he must have an army. Here comes the big set piece and it's him on the roof grabbing a rope. And I'm like, What?
Talking about Idris. Idris was one of the characters that I also really enjoyed, but yeah, I also felt it really, like, how does a cat own a tugboat in the middle of water? And, like, this is something. Did they have that in the film?
Well, he's a thief. He's a thief.
But did they have that in the stage?
I don't remember specifically that. They might have. I don't know. I don't know if that was a focus. I don't know why it's a focus in this one.
McCavity is the evil villain in this movie who has magical powers and can make cats disappear. But when he makes them disappear, they go on a tugboat in the middle of London Thames. And that is where all of them get captured. Here's another point with that, though. Because they got back old Deuteronomy, right?
Yeah. Right. They left the other ones there.
What happened? And old Deuteronomy never says anything about what is happening on this tugboat where he's kidnapping cats. I want to know if you left your homies to figure out how to get off of this tugboat in the middle of the water. And at the end of the movie, they're all there together again. How did you get off? They have questions.
They swam.
I'm not really a big fan of swimming.
How did they get off the tugboat? I need to know.
Honestly, I guess everybody can nitpick on story points and little things here and there. There's just nothing to me in this one that actually is worth talking up. Like, that's why I say, like, the Taylor Swift thing, sure. If I'm invested in the film, those type of plot things, I'll just let them go.
Yeah.
I'll just let them go. I was so uninvested in this film that I was checking my watch 10 minutes into it, and I'm like, what is going on? Why is James Corden rummaging through the garbage and now going straight to hell, which is a tugboat? Like, and why is Jason Derulo in it? And what is Magneto doing on the ship? And he just goes, bah, every now and then, and he's tied up. What's going on?
That I literally took notes, and like, I think on my pages I just wrote WTF at least 10 times. I also want to talk about this one. When you first see Jennifer Hudson, she has a moment where she turns around and she flashes her face again, and it looks really cat-like for all of 5 seconds. And I literally physically escaped. I was like, whoa. And I tried to cover my face in that moment because it was
too much.
Too much. You know when you're just like, whoa.
Too close to the camera. You need to step back. You need to just get away from it right now. Like,
yeah.
Show some perspective.
Yeah.
I love Hudson in anything she's in. Every time she is just incredible.
Amazing. That's why I say justice for her. They did her so wrong in this movie.
Yeah, they did.
They did her so wrong. And this, okay. Sorry.
Go, girl. Go.
This is my other part of this movie that pissed me off. Okay. Because you know there's going to be some political moments that I need. Just bring some attention
to you.
Okay.
Okay. So you have Jennifer Hudson, who is obviously black, right?
Mm-hmm.
Y'all, the other cats are mean to her. Horribly mean to her.
Yeah, that's true.
They pick on her. They put her into exile because she once had success and left off to try and be more successful.
That was why?
Yes.
I thought it was because she was with McCavity. Again, I couldn't understand a word they said.
She went off to try and be more successful with McCavity.
Oh, she did go off with him.
Yes.
Okay.
They had a full show. McCavity, she was the star. That's why she wears the fur coat that sort of looks dingy throughout the movie.
Yeah.
Right? So she goes off with McCavity to try and have a better life for herself, which I don't see anything wrong with.
Yeah.
And then, in order for her to... She gets then chosen, after having such a rough life, to die. at the end of the movie. You send her off, so you exile her, then you send her off to die.
Okay,
Let's talk about this.
But to be fair, in the rules of the movie, her being sent off is actually a badge of honor. Everybody is fighting for it. And I'm not talking, I hear what you're saying.
Yes, everyone is fighting for this badge of honor, which makes the movie messed up in itself. You are literally fighting.
Me first.
You are literally standing at the edge of the volcano being like, I want to jump. Choose me to jump to my death. What?
No, it's different than that because it's a competition to see who can get jumped into the volcano.
Who's going to die first? Let's see.
Once a year, who gets to go? We're going into the lava flow. No, I'm kidding. I just wrote the song.
Dive!
I'm burning. It's burning. It's fun. I'm burning. Sorry.
And the fact that, there's so many... mm-hmm. Heavenside Lair? Yeah. And I think that's something that, I didn't piece together until... If I did not read the premise of this whole movie, I would have completely missed that fact.
The political side is actually really... That's an interest... I had not considered that in this particular case. But, I guess I don't know who the entire cast is, but... I mean, the two... I guess you've got Jason Derulo in there. But, I mean, other than that, the two main characters are an outcast that are African-American, are an outcast and the villain.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay. I don't know if that... Now, I don't know if that was intentional, though. Because, again, I don't know the thing that's coming from. You said you looked into that.
Yes.
Or whether that was just, hey, Idris Elba can't sing. Let's give him three lines and make him McCavity. He's a good McCavity.
He's an excellent McCavity.
He was good at that role. Yes. But I don't know whether that was a subtext or not. I don't know if you know that from what you read in the books.
I don't see the subtext with that.
Okay.
But the one thing that... we also have to look at the history of the book, Old Possum's Books of Practical Cats.
Sure.
Right? And I think we have to understand that this was something that T.S. Eliot wrote in 1915, 1930, somewhere around that time before it got produced. And there was so many underlying racist notions at that time that goes into the script.
Sure.
That we also have to sort of give a second to, understand. You know what I mean? One of the things I thought was really interesting was T.S. Eliot wrote with someone else using what they call black language or black dialect of the time, which goes into minstrel shows, which has this history of a lot of people at that time that were performing these poems.
Mm-hmm.
It was part of the minstrel show. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So there's this underlying, really horrible racist background to this whole entire play that has been... And we see this happen a lot in other things that get adapted into something that's not as horrible. But this was something that we also... was sort of poking fun at, you know what I mean? Which also comes with the whole saying of, the cool cat, you know what I mean? Because, even when you look back at the cool cats, and that also is based off of the caricature of black folks, and being, this...
What is that? I don't know what you're
the
referring to.
The fast-talking...
Oh, I see what you mean. The stereotypical cool cat.
So the stereotype of it.
Yes.
The stereotype. I understand what you mean now. Okay.
So all these things also just have a little fun political background on that. Also tie into this movie. There's layers to this, but it's messed up.
It's another reminder that not everything needs to be rebooted again.
Yeah.
The funny thing is what, this... arguably isn't even a reboot. I mean, you're talking about the 1998 version. Well, it's just the stage.
Oh, no, play. I know. But I mean, if you think of it on a grander scale, I mean, this, you said, the book has been around since, the 1915 to 1930s or, era. And then you have different adaptations that have been on stage going all the way across generations until now. So and although, yes, there was only one stage musical that came out in the 90s, it doesn't mean that it's not a reboot again of the same story.
Well, oh, I know, I hear what you're
just
saying.
Just changing it. So that's why I'm saying, sometimes, whenever they do that with some films, obviously it will succeed regardless of what era it comes out in. But what Hollywood is now hopefully going to be realizing is that not every single film that you're readapting or re-bringing back into the film or whatever is going to do well. you know, sometimes you don't need to necessarily redo it again because then you're kind of ruining the original in some form, even though the original is probably a reboot of something else.
Well, that's why but they do it for marketing reasons. That's what it is. That's why you have so many stories. And they tap Batman in there.
But you could compare this and say, look, this one literally has a score of 2.8 compared to the 90s of a 7.6.
Right.
Because everyone's still going to enjoy the original, but then they're going to be associating it with now this debacle of this film.
Well, what you'll probably see is a stage run come back, a rebooted stage run and stuff like that, and then it'll focus more on that. You just won't see another film of this one. But then what they'll say is, well, this musical didn't land, but other musicals will. So we'll just keep going that.
Because right, but I just feel like it's a common theme. It's a hopefully will end soon, because I just feel like, you know, how many times can you tell the same story? I'm sorry. Like,
all the stories have been telling, and this is the thing that we really have to look at, though. We have been telling the exact same story
for hundreds
of years. Yeah. It is the same basic stories that just get retold with twists.
Joseph Campbell says there's only seven stories.
Yeah. I would believe it.
Yeah, and that so Star Wars is you know, really this hero's quest, which is really this Disney film, which is this thing so it's all the packaging and not the meat.
Right.
But I will say this, the meat changes in each
generation. Oh, I understand. Every generation, it will definitely change, but I'm just saying that, you know, there's a way of adapting it so that it could be in its own new story versus being the exact same thing.
Speaking of the story, the one story point that I could somehow, other than the fact that the Jellicles want to do this competition, that's like the only thing I could understand. The other thing was this interesting character of Victoria.
Yes.
We talked about Victoria. Like, how do you feel? I mean, I know you haven't seen the modern film, but even in the play, is there anything about Victoria that you think, what is it that makes her stand apart or set apart from the other characters, other than the fact that she's sort of carrying the narrative along the way?
There's nothing special about Victoria.
No?
No. From my understanding, it is, we're supposed to see this night through Victoria's eyes. Mm. She really was just thrown into the plot to keep the story pushing forward, in my opinion.
Hmm.
And that was her main purpose. It's to allow us to see what the world of Jericho Cats is like through her eyes.
Through her perspective.
Yeah. And without her, they could have still done the same story. I don't think there's anything that is imperative to her, except maybe the kindness that she showed Jennifer Hudson's character. But other than that, I don't think there's anything that was really special about her.
I agree. I don't really have much to say about her.
I disagree. That's interesting, because, I mean,
she's just a narration. She's a point of view.
She is a narration device.
She's a point of view that you have reference to, but that's it.
But I will say this. You brought up the point of J-Hud. Can I say that?
Yeah.
is that what people, can people call her that? Being an outsider.
Yeah.
There are two outsiders in this film, and the other one's Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it may be from her perspective, but she's the one, she's the outcast when she comes in.
Yeah.
And she's trying to learn this whole thing, and she's the only one that is able to separate herself from the others. And she gets sucked in and sees the joy and terror of what's going on. But she always is the one that looks out the door to see. Oh man, what is Jennifer Hudson's character's name? I don't even know. Grisabella? Is that her? Yes, Grisabella. That's a thing. A former member of the tribe who was banished for, among other things, her past allegiance with Macavity. So Victoria is the one that walks through the doors to explore. The other ones sort of keep in their lane.
Yeah.
And are trying to throw themselves at Judi Dench or Deuteronomy. They're trying to get her attention. And she sort of does that instinctively and sort of worms her way up through the ladder. But I, as the second outsider, I would have argued that, yeah, while 90% of the movie she's just a narration device, she is the one that points to the value of the outsiders. Maybe.
How?
Because she constantly is the one that's going through the doors, and she brings her in. Now, I'm not talking about the political stuff that we talked about before. I'm just talking character-wise. Because her character is outside, she's trying to figure all this out.
Yeah.
But there's on two separate occasions, everybody else is having their dance party, and she looks out the door to see Grisabella and either goes out and sings with her or brings her in.
Yeah.
And because she brings her in, Deuteronomy chooses her.
Mm-hmm.
Because she hears her sing and all that. If she hadn't done that, I would have just argued that she was just a vapor in the wind, like just bouncing through. Okay, we're just supposed to follow her. But that would, I don't know. That's what I thought.
I can see your perspective from that angle.
Yeah.
I just felt there was nothing for me that grabbed my attention about that character. I just felt I was like, okay, she's there. And...
Oh, I'm not saying she was riveting, to be fair. I'm just saying from the purpose of the story, that's the only thing that made sense to me.
Yeah.
That was the one character trait of hers where I was like, you annoy me and you're bland.
Yeah.
You're like oatmeal on screen. But
I see. She also couldn't sing.
Oh.
Also, like, she was, there's so many times she was off key.
She was new, wasn't she? I don't know who that actress was.
Yeah, she's a new actress that just emerged. But I feel like without Victoria's narration and being used as a narrating tool, we would just have introductions to cats.
I think that's what we had with her as a narration tool.
There would be no actual story to get us from one cat story to the next cat story.
Agreed, agreed, agreed. We would just be watching, you know, Thumble Ripplin and Dimble Dumpin or whatever his name is, ripping up the couch. I don't even care what their names are.
Like, I don't really care.
They're, basically, if you play Scrabble, you can figure out their names.
Yeah.
But Pinkly Dinkly and Bumble Dumple are ripping up the couch. And she's there, and the only reason you're interested in it is because Victoria walked into that room, and they're barely in it in the rest of the film. And even with Jason Rumpeldumtugger, is that
Rumtugtugger?
Rumtugtugger, he has his dance number, and then he shows up at the in the middle, and then he's in, but he has no other parts. That's the amazing thing. Is it's one thing to introduce 10 characters. But you should have 10 stories.
There is no... There's literally... Nothing. This is a set of poems.
No, that makes a lot of sense. Victoria
thrown in, trying to make some way of connecting all these stories together. Because there's no plot in this movie.
Like, let it be said. We've been talking for 45 minutes. There's nothing... This movie's...
So you don't actually need to go and see it at all.
We haven't got there yet, Alan.
Well, I think we should skip ahead to, you know, screen or skip it. You know, maybe you just don't.
I just... There is... One thing you need in a movie is a plot. One, I believe...
No.
You need to have some kind of...
Have you seen the Fast and the Furious movie? No, I'm kidding. Yeah.
But even that, it like, don't get me started on that, but even that, you have some kind of storyline that makes it to Fast and the Furious. What number are we on now?
7, 8, 9, 10.
I don't even know
next
what
next one is 9,
at.
I believe.
Well,
no,
it just came out. It? There's an animated series that's on Netflix now for it as well.
God.
So they're still going.
No,
I have no idea. It just, you know, I say put this in the category of, you know, the example would be, did you know that there is a National Lampoon's 2 Christmas Vacation? No, yeah, wonder
really,
why?
Really.
Because you forgot about it.
I've seen... Have you ever watched any Terrence Malick movies?
No.
Okay, so I'm one of those guys who likes a good Terrence Malick movie. Tree of Life is a beautiful film in a lot of ways that... And there, I'm not even kidding. There's like a 15-minute segment that is just colors and light and music. And it's like, okay. But you're... The story weaves in and around. It's more like philosophical arguments with beautiful pictures and Brad Pitt walks on and then he's off. And like it's this weird film, but you feel like you've learned something. And then I saw Cats, and it's just a collection of nonsensical things. When you say that it was originally a set of poems, that actually explains the film to me in ways that I never thought. So I came out of there so angry. Not well, angry is not the word. I came out of there so frustrated because A, I couldn't understand it, and B, like I said, the first half of the film is just one introduction after the next that never pays off.
Because they don't follow up. Like, we get introduced to a whole bunch of characters, which is great, but there's no follow-up.
None.
They just become part of the chorus after they're introduced. So how are we going to have a story if there is no story here?
Right.
And I think that's, like, the takeaway for me that I got. I was like, this is very whimsical in its thoughts, but as a movie, you cannot translate this.
No, no. And it might, like, again, even if you're seeing it in a musical, you might feel like you're watching some form of variety show, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I got kids in school, you go and they bring on this number, they bring on the next number, you bring on the next number, and it there's no sense, but it makes sense.
It makes sense in those moments.
But you can't do that in a two-hour film.
And it was so long.
It was long because there was nothing to follow.
Ridiculously long. It just...
What was the total runtime?
17 hours.
Legit felt that way.
It was 2 hours, I think. It was just under 2 hours or two, just over.
I think it was just under.
But it felt like it was 17 hours. I will say this. It is the first movie in years that as I was watching it, I was texting somebody. Which made me feel evil. But I was like,
especially at a movie theater.
Like, it's one thing to get an emergency text from your wife. I was just like, yo, I'm in Cats right now. And you know what? Guys, this has been fun. We're starting to circle around and around here. Let's screen it or skip it.
Okay.
Cats. Screen it or skip it.
Depends on the type of night you're trying to have.
If you want to,
what does that mean?
If you want to have a really trippy night, if you need a movie like that, then yes, go see it. If not, I would say you don't need to see this movie. You don't. There's no reason why you need to see this movie. So I'm going to say skip it. Or screen it at home when it goes to DVD, which should be in the next 2 weeks. Really, truly.
Or if they never know, maybe they'll sell it to Netflix and it'll just be done.
Netflix buys everything, so...
I hope Netflix doesn't buy this. I hope Netflix is like, this was so horrible that we can't afford to buy this.
Have you seen what's on Netflix? They'll buy anything.
Give it a month.
Okay.
Give it a month. Yeah.
Okay. Wait till it comes out on some streaming service so you don't have to sit through and waste your money on this. The last thing I want to say is that if you do see it, you can't unsee it. There is no way you can unsee it. So make sure that this is the right decision that you want to do. That's my opinion.
Now, Alan, you haven't seen the movie.
I have not seen the movie, and I don't plan to.
That was one of the reasons that
I have no interest.
When we were prepping for this podcast,
not everything needs to be redone, and I will continuously stand by that because I just feel like it ruins any positive that it previously had. So it'll be a few years before, you know, you start hearing about everyone raving about the next stage version of this film. So, I don't think the world's going to miss anything if you don't see it. So, skip it.
What I would say is that if you're in a relationship and you
want to break
your spouse, your spouse says to you, honey, I want to take you out tonight. We're going to go to a nice dinner, maybe a nice steak, and we're going to go to a movie. And they say, which one? And you say, we're going to go see Cats. Dump them immediately.
Yeah.
And run screaming in the opposite direction. And skip it, skip it, skip it, skip it, skip it.
I have to say that what was surprising for me is that I asked so many people to go see this movie.
And me included.
The amount of no's, hard no's, hard no.
Yep.
Not even a maybe. I took my mother. Because my mother will go see whatever movie.
I will say this. You could download the soundtrack and decide whether you like it better that way. Or just go right to the Broadway
one. Not the movie soundtrack.
The Broadway one?
Yes.
So skip the movie and go see it on Broadway.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a better way to say it. That's a lot nicer.
Yeah.
Just go see it. The live would be... here, this is a more positive way to spin it. Live enhances the experience.
It creates more excitement. It's more visual. Like I said, they put more thought into the costume, the design, everything. You know, it's more exciting when it's in front of you versus this portrayal.
Naomi, Alan, thank you so much for coming on this week.
Thanks for having
thank
us.
Thank you.
Loved this conversation. Hated this film, but loved our conversation. you're welcome anytime. For you at home, a reminder that you can find us wherever podcasts are available, on iTunes, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podomatic, SoundCloud. You can find us on your Alexa device via Stitcher. If you go to the podcast page, screenfish.net, you can download Fishing for More, where we will try to give you questions that you can discuss about the film if you do decide to inflict you and your children and your children's children upon it. But we will be back next week to talk about Bad Boys for Life, which I am excited about.
I am very excited about that movie, too.
So much more fun than this. But again, thank you to both of you. And for you at home, we started the conversation. This was Screenfish.